Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, December 17th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Three people are reported safe after their fishing boat sank in southern southeast Alaska. The 42-foot Equity, homeported out of Sitka, reportedly hit some rocks on the southwest side of Hakita Island after 10 o'clock Thursday night. Three people on board scrambled into the life raft after a Mayday call on Channel 16. A Coast Guard helicopter from Sitka was dispatched to the scene. Another fishing vessel, the High Pocket, arrived and retrieved the three crew members. They were transported to Klawak. The helicopter arrived on scene a few minutes after the High Pocket. The Equity's EPIRB was turned off and holes were punched in the life raft, but still may be floating in the area. No injuries were initially reported. Earlier in the evening, the same Coast Guard helicopter crew was sent to investigate the report of a red flare near Mary Island, south of Ketchikan. The flare had been spotted by the crew of the fishing vessel Nancy Marie. The 47-foot motor lifeboat from Station Ketchikan was also dispatched to the scene. The fishing vessel Alaskan Knight, with three people on board, had apparently lost its propeller. It's unclear if they tried using the radio to call for assistance. The vessel was towed back to Ketchikan, where Coast Guardsmen did a post-search-and-rescue boarding. No violations were immediately found, and no injuries were reported. The Sitka Tribal Council has appointed two members to seats vacated after last month's closely contested tribal elections. Former council members Harvey Kitka and Clara Gray have been appointed to serve out the terms of Dale Williams and Wade Martin. The pair resigned their council seats after Williams lost the race to tribal council chairman. Kitka and Gray each will serve 1 year, and then they run for full terms if they choose. Also returning to the tribal council for 1 year will be former chairman Woody Widmark. Widmark was appointed to the vacancy left by Archie Nielsen, who has stepped down for medical reasons. Governor Sean Parnell's capital budget proposes spending about $195 million on Southeast projects. That's a little more than 10% of the statewide total of $1.8 billion. The spending plan released Friday is for the fiscal year beginning July 1st. The budget will undergo many changes before it's passed by the legislature in the spring. The largest regional project would rebuild about 22 miles of the Haines Highway, which links the northern southeast city to the Alaskan Highway. The budget proposes spending $31 million on that work. At the southern end of the region, Metlakatla Elementary School would undergo an almost $15 million renovation. The new State Library, Archives, and Museum building in Juneau would see another $20 million added to its funding. The budget would also allocate $10 million towards construction of a road north out of Juneau towards Haines and Skagway. There's also $9 million towards replacing the engines on the Fast Ferry Fairweather. Ketchikan would receive about $5 million for water and sewer system work. Sitka would get about $1.4 million for the same on Baranoff and Jeff Davis streets. Wrangell and Petersburg would each see $3 million for airport apron and taxiway work. The governor's $1.8 billion capital budget would be funded by the state and federal government, plus some other sources. Most large transportation projects use federal dollars. Here's a look at some of the other projects in the KCAW listening area. In Sitka, $1.5 million for the replacement of Mount Edgecombe High School's boilers and improvements to the school's utilities distribution system. $974,000 for deferred maintenance at the Pioneer Home. $225,000 for energy upgrades at the Public Safety Academy. $118,000 for deferred maintenance on the City State Courthouse building. And $15,000 for deferred maintenance on the Public Health Center. In CAKE, $46,000 for replacement of the high school boiler. Again, the capital budget is usually subject to extensive revision by the legislature, which convenes on January 15th. Alaska's governor also has line item veto authority, which has been used extensively in the past. We all know that growing up can be tough. The pressure to fit in can be overwhelming, so can the feeling of isolation when you don't. In the second part of KCAW series on teens and communication, 16-year-old Veronica Nelson takes us on a journey to self-acceptance that many adults could learn from. Through the class she took last year at Sitka's alternative school called Strong Women, Nelson found exceptional strength in her own voice. For parents, some of the themes discussed in this piece may be unsuitable for very young listeners.
Veronica Nelson is in 11th grade at Sitka's Alternative School, Pacific High. Last year, she took a course called Strong Women. In the class, they discussed stereotypes women deal with and how to be there for each other. Nelson says since the class, she's seen many of the girls relax and be more comfortable with who they are.
The harsh words and the constant jealousy and battle, I've seen that just completely drain away since last year. I saw everybody dressing up when they wanted to dress up, not dressing up every day because they felt like they had to look better than everyone else.
Each student in the class defined what it meant to her to be a strong woman. Nelson says women should be able to do any job they want, like be a firefighter or a high-powered executive, without feeling pressure to act like a man.
I think that a strong woman is a woman who can live in a man's world and still get to be a woman. And I think that as long as we can keep our feminine side and still get to have the jobs we want to have and be equally in power.
She says a strong woman is also someone who is proud and compassionate.
Not being afraid to use her voice, not being afraid to fight for what she thinks is right, and also being able to embrace other women around her and not constantly feel the need to compare herself or feel protective of herself around other women. I think that's a strong woman for me, and that's what I strive for.
Nelson is in a leadership group at school and says they want to teach younger kids the power of honesty and self-acceptance.
Some of us want to go to like the junior highs and the elementary schools that were in the class last year, and we've talked about going and talking to the girls there and asking them what a strong woman is to them. And seeing what they have to say, I think it'd be adorable to hear like a third grader's view of what a strong woman is and just build on that and, you know, teach them how not to be afraid to talk about certain things, you know, and if you can't talk to your parents about it, then pick a woman you can talk to about it, your teacher, your counselor, or just someone who's close to your family. And it's really important because not only are you being a leader for other people, you're being a leader for yourself. And if you can't stand up for yourself, who can you stand up for?
But Nelson says there was a time when she didn't speak up, when she feels she should have.
I started using and drinking when I was around 11 or 12, and I was raped when I was 13, when I was living down south. I had never talked about it. I thought that it was okay. I thought that it was nothing. I thought it was normal. I thought it happened to everyone when they were too drunk to defend themselves. Ever since I spoke up, I am so comfortable with being who I am and with talking about what happened to me.
And it was just last year when she broke her silence.
I think it was either during or just before the Strong Women's class was happening to my grandparents and to the lady I was living with. After that, it was like I could just talk about anything and just feel happy and comfortable. And I'm going, why didn't I speak up for myself when I was 13? Why? And it was because everything was so hush-hush. You don't talk about these things. You don't do that. And it's just not something you talk about.
Since she spoke up, Nelson says her peers feel more comfortable talking about their experiences, too.
After speaking up about that, more girls in the class started speaking up about things that had happened to them. I think that's when I started really realizing that all we have is each other. Like, if we're holding back all these things that happened to us, and we're not sharing that we know what someone else is going through, then, you know, we're causing them to hold things inside of them.
Nelson is inspired by the strength she's discovered in herself and interested in inspiring others. She's taking a filmmaking class at Pacific High, where she's making a video about drug and alcohol abuse in Sitka. It's the story of her life as a recovering addict and as a strong woman. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
Nelson's filmmaking class is showing final projects on Wednesday, December 19th at 5:30 p.m. in Pacific High's temporary quarters in the Southeast Alaska Career Center. It's free of charge, and everyone is welcome to attend. For more information, you can call the school's front desk at 747-0525 or visit our website, kcaw.org. Boaters may have noticed gray, dead-looking trees on islands north of Ketchikan. Like other parts of southeast Alaska in recent years, western hemlock trees on those islands are suffering from a sawfly infestation. But U.S. Forest Service officials say it's normal and not cause for concern. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
A team of scientists from the U.S. Forest Service visited Hump, Joe, and Grant Islands this fall, responding to reports of dead hemlock trees. It turns out that trees just look dead. Hungry sawflies have stripped the needles, leaving gray but living branches behind. Silviculturist Sheila Spores says the team positively identified the culprit as the hemlock sawfly.
which is a common defoliator of the forest up here on the Tongass. And this is the second year of a hemlock sawfly outbreak, but this year was the first year it was spotted in Ketchikan.
The trees are expected to recover for the most part.
The hemlock sawfly comes in, it feeds on the needles, and it makes the tree appear to be dead, but it's just caused the tree to lose its needles, and oftentimes it'll just be able to regrow its leaves the next year.
A damaged tree's growth will slow down, and Spores says in extreme cases the top of the tree might die. She says a sawfly epidemic is natural to the forest, and this isn't the first time it's happened.
The largest outbreak actually occurred in 1952 through 1953, and that affected 4 million acres. And then there was another outbreak, but much smaller, in 1983 and 1984. So this is just another outbreak, but it's relatively small.
Spores estimated about 150 acres were hit this year in the Ketchikan area. She says similar damage was noted last year on Edelin, Zarembo, and Wrangell Islands. When scientists visited those areas again this year, the same stands had been left alone, although neighboring trees had been hit. Entomologist Elizabeth Graham, one of the scientists who visited the affected islands, says hemlock sawflies are native to southeast Alaska. The adults are small wasps, and the larvae look like caterpillars.
So the adults lay their eggs in the fall, the larvae hatch in the summer, and then start feeding, and they'll actually feed in groups, so you have this almost a mass of little larvae feeding together on branches. Large populations can pretty much strip trees.
And that's all for Raven News. If you missed any of our stories and like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Listening to KCAW Sitka.